All right, guys, welcome to episode number 2. My man, Rand Fishkin, the founder of Moz. Super pumped to dive into his story about scaling up Moz and then his exit. And guys, stay tuned because this is a really exciting, great story that I didn't even know. Right beside that, guys, before we get started, I want to give a big shout out to High Level. They have been huge in terms of impacting Karen and myself on our journey. And I want to encourage every one of you that if you're not using High Level and you're looking for a relationship management system, to check them out. We got a full write-up on them on theheights.com. So make sure to go check it out before we dive right in. Let's go, baby. Well, man, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate you joining me and really excited to chat for a bit here.
Yeah, my pleasure, JC. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So I want to go back. You know, it's a committed podcast, right? We're talking about the history, the journey, the ups and downs, right? And so I love what you're doing over at Sparkturo. I would love to start off, of course, with Moz and that journey. And so just tell us a little background on kind of how that went and you were there for a long time.
Sure, yeah. So I technically started working at the company that became Moz in 2001, and I left that business under non-ideal circumstances in 2018. So yeah, 17 years. Started initially as doing web design for like local clients in Seattle that needed websites in the early days. A lot of dentist offices, that kind of thing. And eventually became an SEO consulting company and then a software company. So we launched software before we had ever heard or anyone was using the word software as a service, but it was a subscription software business that took off relatively fast, mostly because we had lots and lots of people who, like yourself, right, ran agencies in the search marketing space as that was growing very rapidly and were reading our blog, right? So Moz, it was originally called SEO Moz, was a very popular resource for lots of people in the field because we had that audience, because they knew us, liked us, trusted us, were subscribed to us via email, got every blog post in the morning, you know, watched the videos every Friday. That software business, even though the software was what I would call very amateur hour today, took off rapidly, right? So people were paying us $30 or $40 a month, and it turned into a great revenue stream. In 2000, was that the end of 2007, we raised a round of venture capital. So some local investors here in Seattle put in $1.1 million. Don't listen to Wikipedia. They don't have the right numbers or TechCrunch. Somebody got it wrong somewhere and then everybody cross-cited. So $1.1 million in 2007, and then basically grew very rapidly for 8 uninterrupted years, like 100% year-over-year growth, right? So in, what was it, maybe 2014, we were doing $40 million in revenue, recurring revenue. And the funny part about this, of course, is that as a venture-backed business, that's not quite as rapid growth as they'd like to see, right? So we were, especially at the end of that, so like 2014-15, the revenue growth started plateauing. You know, it was like growing 50% a year over year and then 20% year over year, and that means that we just couldn't get to the numbers that venture investors expect, right? Which is basically, in order to be a venture success, a software business really needs to get to 100 million plus in revenue, growing 20-25% year over year, with, you know, 80% plus gross margin. So Moz was hitting like two of those three, but not the third one, total size. And that pressure was really intense. So JC, I stepped down from the CEO role in 2014, remained chairman of the board, but yeah, I was going through at the time a deep bout with depression and was not functioning on all cylinders. And I thought that the right move was to replace myself at the CEO role. I think in hindsight, I regret that decision. Probably not ideal. I should have matured and stepped up to the plate and whatever, maybe taken a sabbatical or a little bit of time off or taken some responsibilities off my plate, but probably should have stayed in that role. I don't think Moz was mature enough to support bringing in new CEO. So regardless, you know, 2018, I left / was asked to leave, sort of depends on who you ask, the company. And that transition at the time was really painful and awful. But again, in hindsight, kind of awesome, like kind of a wonderful move to start this new company, SparkToro, which I started the next day. I think I left Moz like February 28th and started SparkToro March 1st, 2018. Wrote a book, Lost and Founder, that came out that year, kind of about the Moz journey, the ups and downs, you know, hard times and good times. And SparkToro was kind of remarkable in that we raised money in a very different way. I didn't want to raise venture again, and so chose to sort of tap my personal network. A lot of folks like yourself actually invested between 25 and 100 grand each. We raised $1.3 million in 2018, used that over the next year and a half to build the product and launch it. And 6 months after launch, we were profitable. And for the next 2 years, we put those profits kind of into the company's pockets. And then last year, we were able to repay our investors their full $1.3 million. And now everybody gets to participate in profit sharing pro rata, right, to the degree of their ownership for the life of the business. And this is something I'm really, really, really passionate about in both my companies. So I started another company last year called Snack Bar Studio, and I run both these companies. Snack Bar is making an indie video game for PC and Switch and Xbox, PlayStation. And that business is planning to raise money this summer in exactly the same way, because I really love this model. I think there's a false dichotomy, false belief that you either bootstrap or you raise venture and there's nothing in between. Mm. And I don't think that's right. I think that is fundamentally wrong. I think there are tons of businesses that have mid-market and small cap opportunities to be, you know, businesses doing a few million to a few tens of millions of dollars of revenue, which is wonderful for a small investor to get their money back and sort of participate in dividends. And, you know, if you want some exposure to the small business market, as opposed to just putting all your money into a 401k or public markets or treasury bonds, right, which are now have decent yield, then, you know, this is an opportunity for investors. And for founders, my God, it is so wonderful knowing that my goal is to keep SparkToro and Snack Bar profitable. Not how do I get to $100 million in revenue? How do we become a billion-dollar unicorn? How do we sort of IPO or sell for, you know, $500 million or die trying? And that that goal is just so much more realistic, right?
I love it. I mean, this resonates with me so much. Okay, so you're at like six things that I want to like go in and talk.
Yeah, we can hit on everything. Right?
The first one you mentioned, you don't know this about me, Rand, but I built my company, several million in revenue, 150 team members. I found myself last year for the first time in my life, and I'm a happy guy, like very positive, very energetic, very like whatever. And I always looked at depression as just like, get over it, kind of like, come on, you know, get your thing. And I found
if only the chemicals in your brain felt that way.
Yeah. I mean, I found myself, fetal position in the shower for like 3 hours. My wife found me and I couldn't like think straight. I was like lost. I was overwhelmed. I was just rock bottom, like from an emotional, physical standpoint. So many people were watching Height, and we're not Moz by any stretch, but like, wow, they're so successful. They're growing, they're scaling, top line, Inc. 5000, all the awards. But like the complexities of having investors or people around you or whatever the case may be is just, it is tough.
Yeah.
It's really tough.
Well, I'm very sorry you went through that. And I will say, you know, I've talked to a ton of people post that experience, right? I wrote about it, I think, in Lost and Founder. And so a lot of folks have reached out and sort of said, hey, I've had similar experiences. And it is not at all tied to what's really going on in your life, right? There are absolutely times that are more stressful and you seem to be functioning on all cylinders. Things are fine with you. You're sort of emotionally processing things, whether that's, you know, sort of grief or challenges in your personal life, your professional life. And then there's other times when, gosh, it seems like everything is going wonderfully, but my brain is broken, right? Like my mental state is a mess. Unfortunately. So this is something, you know, my brother and I both suffer from. And I'm pretty sure, you know, my dad's generation is like the kind of generation that doesn't talk about it, would never admit or accept it. But I am certain that when I was a teenager, my dad was going through exactly the same thing. And
see how it messed with my confidence. It messed with my like energy. Second guess what other people were thinking, you know, in those moments. I had like, it was that moment where I was, there's a quote that I love. It's not, I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I am who I think you think I am. And so this idea of like, you know, losing the confidence and you just kind of guessing, what are other people thinking? What are my investors? What's the board? What's my partners? What's my whatever? And then that just messing with you and compounding in a really negative way. But
yeah, I mean, I think for me, a lot of that experience was feeling hopeless.
Mm.
Just, you know, feeling that I did not have the power to affect change in the ways that were going to be right for myself, my family, my company, the people that I love and care about in the world. Just an awful feeling and completely untrue, completely untrue. When after I stepped down from the CEO role at Moz, that's when I actually lost control and power to change and influence the course of the company. And of course, that conflict is what, you know, led to my eventual departure. And I think almost certainly was responsible for a lot of the poor performance of the business too.
Mm. Did you find yourself when you were in that situation, and I could speak for me, where I was almost at a conflict. It was like, do I make a decision based on what I truly believe is right for the company versus what I believe my partners or my shareholders want for the company? And sometimes they were a conflict, and I found myself almost doing what I thought would make them happy, but ultimately never would. Like, it would never freaking make them happy. And in return, I was just screwing up everything because I was making bad moves and it wasn't helping them, which, you know what I mean? Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
It completely makes sense. I have a ton of empathy for that. I mean, so this is one of the very unique things about how we funded SparkToro and how we put together the structure of the business, which is essentially our investors have no rights other than they have the ability to agree to or veto a future funding round, right? And 70% of them have to agree to a future funding round or a sale. But other than that, they don't even technically have any rights of visibility into the business's operation. So every 6 months, I really like to send a very complete, very transparent update. That's who I am. I love sharing with them whether things are going good, things are going bad. I love sharing. Mm. But I have no obligation to share, right? They have no way to remove me as CEO. This was quite important to me after my previous experience. Granted, I removed myself as the CEO of Moz, but I heard too many horror stories after that. And the reality is that our investors are aligned so closely with our goal, which is essentially to build a really what we call a chill work environment, right? Amanda, Casey, and I, the only three people at SparkToro, we try, JC, to aim for French working hours or less, right? 32 hours a week or less, very often 20 hours a week or less. And we have stressful weeks, right? We have weeks where we're putting in 40 or 50, maybe even a 60-hour week now and then, but extremely rare. And we can take lots of time off. We sort of have like a unlimited-ish vacation policy. We just sort of get our work done. We have very few meetings. We say no to a lot of things. And we prioritize what we think will keep the company growing and profitable. And if the growth rate is 10%, that's great. We're super happy with that, right? We don't need 100% or even 50% year-over-year growth. And it's been such a different experience and such a better one to live, right? If someone told me tomorrow, hey, you could go back and be the CEO of Moz in 2016 again, and we'll pay you $1 million a year. Nope, not taking the deal. Sorry. I think that number would probably be like 20. Like 1 year for 20 million, I might do it. But less than that, I don't know.
But this is so real in our culture, and I assume probably maybe every all generations, but this idea of these vanity metrics, right? Like this top line revenue, and oh, I got a round of funding. I went through venture capital. I raised 100 million. Even with myself, I got 150 team members that depend on me for everything, right? How is that a great thing?
Versus okay, here's
real thing. Go ahead. Yeah.
This is going to sound crazy, and I'm going to think about this a little more, but I wonder if the amount of money you make is also a vanity metric. Certainly above a certain number, it is a vanity metric, right? Like, you know, whatever, Elon and Zuckerberg, they're not going to spend their billions, right? So it seems like it's vanity, right? Like what Mark Zuckerberg made $20 billion or something on Monday from, Facebook's share price is going up. And
that's right.
I think that's a vanity metric, right? Because it's not real. Maybe it improved his life. I don't know if I hope it did. I hope it did. I think I hope it did. I want everybody to be happy, but I doubt it did, right? I doubt it had any impact at all on him other than from a sort of bragging perspective. I'd say the same for a lot of founders, right? And a lot of folks who optimize for that. I know this feeling so well because I've been there. You want to be taken seriously by your peers. You want to be looked up to. You want people to invite you on stages and podcasts and webinars. You want to be, you know, number two on the Inc. 500 list. You want to be all those things. And you want to be them because it feels good to accomplish things. And I am not against accomplishments. I think mastery and purpose can come from external recognition. And that's okay. I want to recognize that that's a real thing. And it feels really good to get recognized for your work. And it's hard to get recognized for your, hey, I'm running a business that I really love, that's rewarding for me, that lets me participate in my, you know, whatever, kids growing up or spend time with my partner or take care of my sick aunt or, you know, those things. Unfortunately, there's no Inc. 500 for here's the entrepreneur who takes the best care of their family members in need or hosts the most wonderful dinners for their friends. You know, like, you know, they don't have award shows for that. But I think if you can get your brain into a place where you push some of that need for external recognition down, recognize that that's a vanity metric, recognize that it's not the same thing as a wonderful, happy life. And try and lift up those things that really do reward you, which I think a lot of times is the relationships that you are in, friends, family, coworkers, all that kind of stuff, the joy and happiness that you bring to the world and the people around you and yourself, right? Like, are you getting energy from this thing or are you crying in the shower, right? Like, we've all been there. It's,
yeah. And what I found is that the energy that it takes or gives me, it's not even almost about me. It's about then I show up with my kids in a really bad way or I'm,
right.
You know,
oh yeah.
Spending all evening or my wife or whatever the case may be. Right. We have a lot of listeners in the marketing agency space and it is incredible. What one can do is if you as the owner own the business, did the sales, one account manager, and then white label a lot of the fulfillment, not love with while you're able, but you can do it. And you can literally, with 30 clients, you can profit around, give or take, 25 to 30 grand a month. We have so many, you know, doing that level versus I've got agencies that are in our committed mastermind where, you know, they're doing 1, 2, 5, 10 million and they're trying to profit 20 or 30 in the same amount because they're, you know, over leveraged, so they're trying to get to the next level. No, by the way, they've built up. So every time they have a churn, they have to increase. And it's just, it's difficult. It's complex, super complex. So this is interesting. I'm actually, okay. This is actually a completely different direction. Okay. So let's dive in here. So Spark Turo and also Snagback, you're doing this incredibly different way of funding. Most people don't think about it. As you said, most people are thinking venture capital. Let me go out and raise money from some type of professional investor so I can, whatever the case may be.
Right.
Or like me trying to Dave Ramsey this thing all the way up and just, you know, grassroots it. You went out and you specifically talked to people in your niche that had respect for you, that admired you and your work, and you got them to a number where it wasn't like, oh my gosh, you know, some type of heavy burden on them, but also they got to participate. They got to be involved. They got to be a part of something new. Then your really first goal was, how do I pay back that money in the first, you know, 2 or 3 years? And now you're kind of in this freedom mode where it's like everything's icing on the cake, essentially.
Yeah, let me be clear. So technically from first funding to payback was 4.5 years. So okay. I mean, we would have loved to have paid them back in 2 or 3 years, but we, you know, it literally took us a year and a half to build and launch the product. We built it in a very, I would say, considered way. And also we needed that time because we didn't have a big team, right? It was just me and Casey building. And I would also say that, so there's a challenge here, which is, I think if someone wanted to raise money in this way, because it's not popular and well-known, you have to have a network first, right? You've got to have a network of people who know and like and trust you. Of the 30, I believe we have 36 investors in Spark Turo. Of those 36, I personally knew 28 of them. And I would say probably 20 of them very well before the funding round. Granted, I only pitched 44 people. So very high success rate, right? Like only a handful of folks said no. But, you know, I
knew who you were going for. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew who I was going for. I generally knew people who had money and didn't have money and reached out to the right types of folks and that kind of thing. I still give some of my friends a hard time for not investing, right? I'm like, well, it looks like it would have been a good move, you know, that kind of thing. But also, as an investor myself, so, you know, Geraldine and I have put some money into some companies over the years and some funds, some of which I think were great moves and just didn't work out, some of which I am not sure I would have done again. Some of them were for what I'd almost call like political reasons, right? So like our investor in Moz in our second round was Foundry Group. The Foundry Group folks were deeply involved with Techstars. They wanted me to be a Techstars mentor. They were like, you should put some money into this, you know, the fundraising for Techstars Seattle, you know, this quarter, next quarter. Right. So, you know, of course I said yes. And, you know, those haven't done so great, but whatever, it doesn't matter, right? Like it was just part of the ecosystem that these folks run in. And so I think it's part of the expectation. I would say, you know, from an investor perspective, the frustrating part is, let's say you are, let's imagine that your net worth is $5 million, just to throw it out there. And, you know, liquid capital, you're keeping about 20% of that liquid. So you have $1 million or so in whatever, checking and savings accounts and that kind of thing. Easily accessible, maybe a treasury bond, whatever. So someone comes to you and pitches you and says, hey, you know, I'm looking to raise whatever, $1 million. Do you want to come in for $500,000? Your answer is going to be like, I can't do that, right? Like that's just, it's irresponsible with my finances. I can barely take, you know, 10 bets, never mind, you know, one. So at that size. And my guess is what you really want to be able to do is to find 5 or 10 companies that you would love to back and support and that have a very high chance of repaying your money. They don't have to beat the market, right, in terms of market rate returns. They don't have to, like, be 10 times better than a treasury bond, whatever. Like, you don't need the venture style returns from those, because your goal is, hey, if 75% of these companies can get me my money back, and then 1 out of 10 of them, 2 out of 10 of them can make me 2 or 3x, I'm going to be so happy. Mm-hmm. And if the other ones are getting me, you know, 10% return on top of my money back, or a 20% return on top of my money back, that's gravy. I'm totally happy with that. But those type of investments are not present, right? Because, yeah, you know, the venture model only works if you can invest in, I believe the number is 500, right? Statistically speaking, you have to invest in 500 companies to have greater than normal odds of making a market rate of return, right? 7-8%, right?
Which is terrible.
So that really, you know, I mean, mostly it's luck. Sequoia would argue it's their network or whatever, right? Maybe that is. But if you can't be Sequoia, then it gets real tough for an individual investor. And this, you know, this is my sort of pitch to founders, is I'm like, if you raise money this way, right, and I'm in your network, like, I can make a bet on you. Geraldine and I can put in 25 grand, 10 grand, maybe even 50, whatever, right? And take a bet on you, because we're betting that you can repay that money in a few years, and then we can put that money towards somebody else's company. Kind of beautiful.
I like this a lot, actually. We've got a company that I acquired a majority share in a couple of years ago, and we believe a lot in it. I'm normally a pretty low-key, you know, like, kind of like, you know, I can get back my money, make a little money, create some jobs. It sounds fun, you know, type of guy. But I actually think this could be nuts. And we didn't want to go venture because we didn't want that pressure, right? But we've been trying to play with how to raise a little bit of money over the last couple of months. So this is actually, I'm gonna send over my partner in that.
Well, so one thing that might interest you, JC, if you Google SparkToro funding, not only will you find the details of what we did, but you'll also see that we paid our attorneys a little extra to open source the documents. So you can find an open source version of the docs that we use to raise money. You can fill in your own details. A few companies in the US have already used our structure, and I think one in the UK as well, have used the SparkToro structure to raise money. There's a fund called Tiny Seed Fund that essentially used a modified version of the SparkToro funding model to launch their investment vehicle, which has a fund in Europe and the United States, and they have this kind of similar payback style model for SaaS businesses. So my hope is 10 years from now, 15 years from now, people look at SparkToro, hopefully they look at Snack Bar Studio and the video games, and they're like, this model looks really cool. Like, let's see if we can do more like this, right? And I recently invested in a culinary technology company here in Seattle that with a close friend, and he raised money in it using the SparkToro docs. So I am crossing my fingers. I'm hoping that this can take off, because it creates a very different mentality. And I think it trickles all the way down, right? It trickles down not just to the founders and the team members, but to customers too, right? Because your customers at a venture-backed startup are really a means to an end. They're a means to, how do I become a $1 billion company and get my investors their 100x return, you know, 10x, 100x return, as opposed to, you know, I really care about my customers because everyone matters, because margin is the thing that is important to me. And so we're trying to be a business that is around for a long time so we can pay dividends for a long time. Because that changes your mentality, it changes your approach to whatever, you know, customer service, how you build product, how you go to market. When you look at the
everything.
Yeah. When you look at the failure of Moz, right? It was specifically because Moz took its eye off the market it was serving, off of SEO, because the board of directors no longer believed that the SEO market was going to be big enough to get the company to the valuation and the size that it needed to be to get the returns they were seeking. And so it broadened and tried to be SEO plus social media plus content marketing plus PR plus email plus, you know, like kind of let's go do the HubSpot thing of going broad, not in exactly the same way, but going super broad. And what happened? Ahrefs and SEMrush and a few other companies came in and took the SEO software market out from under Moz, right? And essentially used that, oh, well, these guys are going to give up their market. We'll just take it, you know, and obviously built very successful businesses that grew even bigger than Moz. And so that decision not to focus on its core customer, not to keep serving those folks and do that job better and better, that killed it.
But I love the story here because I know that there was a lot of regret, a lot of, you know, depression, anxiety, all this stuff. You could easily sit here and go, man, if I wouldn't have X, Y, and Z, but this is every entrepreneur's life. I hope anyways, I hope we're not the unicorns here in a negative way, but how you drive past that and you could still, an entrepreneur like yourself, I mean, even Sparturo closes today. You know, you can go out and do something new, another idea, and keep it growing. And so how do we learn from the past and really taking in, but also just continue to move forward, continuing to push and serve. And, you know, to your point, a venture back, you said you're working 20, 30, sometimes, you know, 40, 50 hours a week. Venture capital, they would never let that happen, ever. You know, we could double down, just imagine, yeah. You know. So that's really cool, man.
Yeah. I mean, the venture environment is very odd, right? Like, I wish I could describe to you how is the cultural pressure of the system, not individual pressure from investors, right? I wouldn't say like Michelle and Brad, my board members, were calling me up and being like, hey, are you working hard? Or, you know, what I expect these hours from you. That's not it. You're not getting that kind of pressure like you might from a manager or a boss or anything. It's more that you're in that ecosystem and that ecosystem culturally seeps into your company DNA and your personal life and conception of yourself and conception of what success means and doesn't. And you know, right, that you're statistically in a terrible situation, right? On average, I think it is 93 out of 100 venture-backed companies will die in 5 years or less and won't return 1x to their investors, right? That they won't even pay their investors back that money. And that's expected, right? That's like normalized in the structure. And then you're going to get five of those companies that will deliver 3 to 5x returns. You know, Moz was probably, I'm not sure Moz even hit 2x return for its investors. You know, maybe 1.5 or something, right? So it's like kind of messy in the middle. It's weird. Moz is probably in the 95th percentile of successful venture-backed businesses, which makes it quite a failure.
Yeah.
And then there's one or two companies at the top that will get the 10x, 50x returns and make up for the whole portfolio. And that's the model, right? So it's essentially it's not a wealth creation model. It's a wealth distribution in exactly the wrong kind of way, right? Like every American complains about every comment you see on Reddit or TikTok, right? Is like the wealth distribution is really warped. And the whole venture capital industry is essentially, how do we make a few monopoly winners and a bunch of failures, right? Yeah. Complete failures. Squeeze it all out of one or two. And the belief, unfortunately, in Silicon Valley is that this is the way startups and entrepreneurship works. But you and I know, and all your agency owners who are listening to this know, that's not the way it works. There are tons of small and medium-sized businesses that can be extremely successful and produce nice margins and give you a great life and give your customers and your team members good lives. And why not? Right? Yeah. Why not? This is just me. Casey, my co-founder, loves going to chains. I don't like going to Subway or Starbucks or Quiznos. I like independent sandwich shop that has like two locations down the street and, you know, the lady who runs it is awesome. And, you know, she makes like the best, what are those? The Vietnamese sandwiches. That's what we got a lot of those in Seattle. Like, yeah give me that. I want that, you know, artisanal banh mi. I don't want cold cuts on rye.
That's right. Someone who, the owner there, that cares. You can feel the can feel the excitement. They're having fun. They're not worried about, like you said, I think as entrepreneurs, we have to be profitable, but this idea of the product person running the organization, you know, that cares about sandwiches. I love sandwiches. I want to make the best sandwiches for anyone. You see this in construction. My uncle's a really great contractor. He'll never hire a team because he's so adamant about the best house in the world. He'll never grow to a whatever, but he makes the best freaking houses, and he has a line behind his company. You know, someone like me, I come in, I'm like, you know, we can hire people and we can scale. We can get some different trucks. We can, no.
Yeah, there's something really beautiful about being artisanal. We do this at SparkToro all the time, right? Folks from big companies will email us and they'll be like, hey, are you guys SOC 2 compliant? Would you jump through these hoops? Like, we'd like to pay you for this thing. And we want a demo. I don't have a sales team. I'm sorry, I can't do a demo for you. We have a bunch of videos, right, that you can watch about the thing. I'm happy to answer questions over email, but we get a lot of those every week and we just reply, sorry, we don't do demos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The beauty, the freedom in that is a great thing. Well, Ray, this is awesome, man. It wasn't even the direction I was expecting to go, but I love it even more. And so to hear your story, and it's so many people's story, but then the rise afterwards and just how you guys have crushed it. A big fan of all your work. I follow you and everyone as well. And so anything I can do, don't hesitate to let me know.
Yeah.
People get a hold of you. What's the best place to connect or at least follow you?
Sure. Yeah. So I am, like a lot of folks, I kind of moved off of Twitter, and I'm mostly on LinkedIn and Threads these days. You can find me at either one. I also, you know, if folks want to try out SparkToro, we have this model where it's like a forever free account. So you can just sign up for free at sparktoro.com, and there's no free trial. You don't have to put in your credit card or anything like that. If you want to check out the video game, it's still a couple of years from launch, but you can go to snackbarstudio.com.
I love it. I love it, brother. Well, I appreciate you and everything you do for the industry, and looking forward to our next chat.
Yeah, JC, I hope to be able to join you in person at one of your events too.
Yes, we'll make it happen.
All right, take care.